Good morning. My name is Shelby, and I will be your conference operator. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Brenna Buehler, Senior Public Relations Manager for Kelley Blue Book, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this month's Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader Sales Day conference call. We have both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Senior Analyst for Auto Trader, speaking on the October 2016 sales results, followed by a Q&A session. First up, we have Alec Gutierrez.
Thanks, Brenna, and thank you, everyone, for joining the call. So far, we've seen sales come in generally as expected, with only a handful of reporters, of manufacturers having reported their numbers thus far. From what we've seen, we expect to see the month close out at around 17.8 million SAR, which is, again, right in line with our initial projection earlier this month. In terms of volume, that's roughly a 5 to 6% decrease year over year. Keep in mind there are two fewer selling days in 2016 compared to October of 2015, however, and that puts us on pace, again, for a little more than 1,360,000 units overall. Again, looking at the major manufacturers, GM is the one that actually has come in and outperformed thus far. A strong month from top to bottom for GM. Of particular note, as in previous months, was the fact that the Silverado continues to perform well. Again, from a volume perspective, down slightly to the tune of 1,500 to 2,000 units, but overall close to 50,000 units in total for the month, which again points to the fact that the truck and SUV market remains strong in the U.S. with gas prices affordable and with affordable finance options available in terms of longer-term loans, lease offers, et cetera. Looking at the macroeconomic factors as a whole, again, the environment is still very stable in terms of supporting a robust auto sales environment. Unemployment remains low at about 5%. Consumer confidence rate is very steady month over month. And in terms of the financial factors, looking at ATPs, consumers paid about $34,600 on average last month, a 2.3% year-over-year increase. Again, that continues to be supported by rising incentives. Still tabulating the final total for October, but in September we saw incentive spend hit $3,700 per unit, which was up from $3,100 last year. So again, while ATPs continue to rise, incentives continue to rise alongside that and actually at a faster pace than the growth in overall transaction prices. On the year, we still expect to see sales close out 2016 at around 17.4 million units. Again, so far what we've seen this month continues to support that estimate. And then as we look ahead to 2017, the expectation is that we'll see another flat or slightly down market. We haven't finalized the numbers as of yet, but the expectation is that sales will continue to tighten, especially in the compact and mid-size car segments, as we've already seen contraction so far this year. Again, the emphasis will likely continue to be on trucks and SUVs. So with that, I will turn it over to Michelle for her additional insights and analysis.
Thanks, Alec. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I can't emphasize enough that while we are seeing sales off last year's peak, they are just barely off. Last October was 18 million SAR. As Alec pointed out, we're expecting it to come in around 17, 8 million. And indeed, we are seeing signs of retail softening from a year ago. We have a company, dealer.com, that runs 62% of the dealer websites across the country, and shopping is down on those sites. And not surprising, as has been the case all along, we see increased shopping for sport utilities and trucks, but down for cars. And we are seeing incentives rising. We have a company, AIS Rebates, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that tracks incentives, and we are definitely seeing an increase in programs and amounts. We looked specifically at trucks this month because in September, Ram 1500 outsold the Silverado, and because of big incentives, and we saw Chevrolet add some pretty hefty rebates on very specific Silverado models in very specific markets. And that's what we're seeing a lot of, is very targeted incentives. We also think there were probably some on some of the bigger sport utilities. While we see inventories also rising as well as incentives, we're also seeing discipline exercised by the automakers. We saw that with Ford trimming productions. I suspect we will see that from other manufacturers going forward too. I think history has not been forgotten by auto executives. They don't want a repeat of the days of super high inventories and that required ludicrous incentives to move that metal. So General Motors turned in the better-than-expected sales performance in October, thanks mostly to big sales increases of the larger sport utilities. If you saw, Chevrolet Suburban was up 86%. Crossovers like the GMC Acadia were up double digits, and the smaller trucks, the Chevrolet Colorado, was up 50%, and it looked like many of those went to commercial fleets. So those are all vehicles that generate beefy profits for GM, by the way. Buick's increase came from its sport utilities only. The new Envision kicked in some sales. Encore was up. Cadillac is an interesting story in that we are seeing a big transaction price increases on the strength of the new models, the CT6 and the XT5. Even though sales are down, Kelley Blue Book's estimate was that Cadillac's ATPs were average transaction prices rose nearly 8%. Cars, it was a mixed bag for GM. The brand new Malibu was down 35%, but the new Cruze was up 9%. Turning to Fiat Chrysler, sales down about what we forecasted, about the 10%. If you looked at the Chrysler brand, it was down 45%. That's a brand in transition. It's ridding itself of the old Town and Country minivan and the 200 sedan, and then launching the Chrysler Pacifica. And that was a bright spot, and where there weren't many for Chrysler. Kelley Blue Book calculated that the Chrysler brand had a 13% increase in its average transaction prices, and largely due to the fact that the Pacifica is fetching top dollar in that minivan segment. The only other makers, Nissan, again, a utility and truck story, and I would say the same for Honda. Utilities and trucks strong, and cars a mixed bag at best. So with that, I guess we can open it for questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Nathan Bome with USA Today. Your line is open.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Nathan.
So you didn't mention Volkswagen. I know that the whole group hasn't reported sales yet, but the Volkswagen brand, their numbers are out, and it doesn't look so good. It's interesting because this is the first month, year over year, in which, you know, they had the stop sale last October, too, and yet still down pretty significantly. So fair to say they haven't found the floor yet? They don't. I mean, the sales, so no sign of recovery there.
Yeah, I was going to say at this stage, it does look as though Volkswagen continues to struggle, and I don't know that we've seen a floor yet. I know right out of the gate when the stop sales first went into effect, Volkswagen began to ramp up incentives, specifically on Tiguan and a few other models, to try and offset some of the lost sales from Sportwagon and some of their other TDIs. I don't know that they've kept the throttle on as aggressively in terms of incentives. Actually, I'm looking at it now. I take that back. Mm-hmm. They continue to push aggressively in incentives. In fact, they're hovering over $4,000 per unit, which is significantly above where they're at last year, where they were just above $3,000 per unit. So the incentives remain on. I think you obviously had some folks that that were swayed early on when the incentives first kicked in. But ultimately, if you look at their portfolio from top to bottom, I don't think they've found a replacement yet for the sales that those fuel-efficient fund-to-drive TDIs brought in. So, yeah, Volkswagen has yet to stabilize at this point.
I would add a few other points. First of all, the agreement was just settled. The judge, signed off on it, and it's now current Volkswagen owners have to make some decisions, and that may take some time for them to do or take action on. So there's that. I also think they've got a product problem. I mean, they just introduced the sport utility vehicle that looks promising, but they don't really right now have the mix of vehicles that the marketplace, regardless of Volkswagen's issues, are demanding. And I think the other thing is that Volkswagen is going to have to reinvent itself. It was known as the diesel brand. What is it going to be now? So it's got to reinvent itself and sell to consumers what makes Volkswagen special.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Brent Snavely with Detroit Free Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Brent.
Hello. Good morning. You mentioned production. You mentioned discipline in the sake the case of Ford cutting back. I just was wondering how much more you think we'll see. If you could elaborate a little bit on production, if you're hearing of other automakers that plan to dial back a little bit.
Well, I can start. I mean, we have seen every month that inventory levels are increasing. If you talk to GM, they'll tell you that they will cut back when increases arise, and they fully expect that that could happen. We'll have to see what the inventory numbers are this month, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're up a bit. So I don't have specifics, Brent, but I think that will be something to watch for.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alec.
No, I was going to say we haven't seen a lot of formal announcements that production is being cut back, but knowing that certainly the pace of the marketplace in terms of growth has flattened, so I think we've certainly seen the announcements from Ford cutting back a little bit. Now, granted, they were running three shifts on a lot of these models, so there's some room to cut back. But, it wouldn't surprise me if we see similar announcements from other manufacturers in the months to come.
And not surprisingly, I would expect to see a lot of it in the cars categories because they've got big incentives on those. They're not moving with those big incentives, and so production cutbacks make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and actually I was going to ask about cars, just sort of more theoretical in terms of an outlook a little bit. Where do you kind of see the market going? I mean, we've seen for a few years now a dial back on car sales, and as you said a number of times, SUVs and trucks is where the growth is. Do you think we're anywhere near sort of a floor there, or do you expect to continue to see that sales trend shift?
I'm not sure that we've seen the bottom. I mean, if our dealer websites, that would suggest people less shopping for cars on those websites, suggest, out in the next several months at least, that we will not see that shift. Maybe a shift in gas prices, but that's not doesn't seem to be on the horizon either. Alec, you may have a different perspective.
No, I feel the same way. I mean, I think in terms of small cars, even mid-sized cars for that matter, they're both kind of in the same boat. I mean, I think more and more consumers have shown that, and mostly because they have the option, that there are viable CUV and SUV alternatives that continue to sway consumers away from small and mid-sized cars. So my expectation is that these segments will continue to contract, continue to tighten, and that's where you're going to see continued strong competition between manufacturers for that slowly shrinking audience, and that's going to come in the form of continued incentives, aggressive, attractive lease incentives in particular. You're still seeing a lot of 159, 169 a month sort of lease promotions on compacts. Mid-sized cars tend to come in at the 189, 199 a month in terms of a lease promotion. But again, these cars have been heavily leased over the last several years, so as these vehicles continue to come back in greater and greater volumes at auction, and knowing that the consumer demand isn't quite what it once was, even just a year ago, that's going to put downward pressure on residuals, making these incentive programs and lease programs in particular more expensive for manufacturers. So that's going to be a tough segment, especially considering there isn't a lot of margin or profitability baked into each one of those sales, right? Those are relatively low margin cars overall. So challenges not only from a sales perspective, but even just from a pure financials perspective, profitability perspective from for the manufacturers.
Which is why we see production moving to low-cost places. The other thing that I will throw in, and I've harped on this forever, that you know we are seeing an affordability issue. There are just many consumers who are being frozen out of the new car market, and I think it has it's having some impact, especially on that small car market, because that's where you typically see very budget-minded people going to. And, you know, people are keeping their cars longer, so it suggests that consumers are challenged at that end of the market, too, financially.
Mm. Great. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Russ Mitchell with Los Angeles Times. Your line is open.
Hi, Russ.
Hi. I know it's tiny, but could you talk about electric car sales?
Were there any? Oh, sorry. No, we haven't calculated all that yet.
Okay.
But
yeah,
I like maybe you have an estimate.
I don't have an estimate just yet. I'm just looking through GM's release right now. It looks like Volt had a decent month. I don't have any other the detail compiled yet, but what I can tell you on the year, electric car sales are down 3.3%. So they still haven't quite gotten a foothold in the U.S. as of yet. But what I will say, only because I had the opportunity to take a closer look at the Bolt recently, I think that we are at a stage when you look at the Chevrolet Bolt, when you look at the Tesla Model 3 that's to come sometime next year, possibly into early 2018 as you talk about mass deliveries, that the numbers are getting to a place that start to make sense for these vehicles to be a viable alternative for maybe not the mass market, but more mainstream consumers. When you're talking about a sticker price of $35,000, a range of 200 plus miles, 238 in the case of the Bolt EV, you're reducing the impact of range anxiety and potentially opening up to a broader consumer base. So I would say for the time being, I wouldn't expect to see the needle move too significantly on the electric car front, but keep an eye out for Bolt EV, and then later, certainly the next generation Leaf and the Tesla Model 3. I think you're going to have electrics now that will soon appear competitive and compelling to a wider and wider audience. So keep an eye on this segment, not today, but in the months to come.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Whalen with Detroit News. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call, as always. A few things. Just first off, Ford obviously isn't reporting today, but after seeing how the market's going today, seems to be on point. Where do you guys see Ford reporting at when it does actually report this week?
So Ford, we had pegged at around 100.
Down 11, I think. Yeah,
right around down 11%. So given what we've seen from the other manufacturers and everyone generally coming in, you know, plus or minus a few thousand units on our forecast. So, yeah, I still feel pretty comfortable that that's where Ford's going to end up landing. So about a 10, 11% decline overall.
Okay, just wanted to make sure of that. And then secondly, What should we be looking at for November and December? I mean, it seems like this is, I believe, the third month of down, while not majorly down, just slightly down for auto sales. And will the election at all play into this? I know I've asked this before earlier in the year, but it seems with such a chaotic election cycle, it seems like consumer confidence could be shaken up at least a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It'll be interesting to see what role the election plays on sales in the last couple of months of the year. Historically, at least when you annualize it, election years haven't played much of a role in influencing the overall number. But again, in the month of November, you know, at the heat of things, it'll be interesting to see. As we look ahead, though, in November, we see two additional selling days in the month. So our expectation is for a strong performance, perhaps an improvement in the neighborhood of 6 to 8%, while in December you have one fewer selling day. So I would expect to see another slight decline from a pure volume perspective, maybe 1 to 2% off on a year-over-year basis. So I think November should look pretty good. December should look pretty strong, especially after accounting for the change in sales days. And just to go back really quick, Mike, on Ford, one point I wanted to throw out there, because, you know, that 11% decline was by far and away the most aggressive that we had anticipated for most of the manufacturers, but it's worth noting that this year was a little more front-loaded in terms of fleet sales for Ford. They came out of the gate swinging in terms of fleet sales, and they have been signaling that they're going to be cutting back. So our forecast accounted for a decline in fleet sales overall, which is pushing their performance lower than most others. So just a bit of context on that number.
The other thing, Mike, I would say to watch, and that we're watching, is, you know, we ought to be starting to see holiday promotions and Black Friday promotions kick off aggressively very soon. In fact, our people are working on that kind of thing now. So that would it'll be interesting to see how hefty some of those promotions are. Sometimes they're more noise than substance, but we'll see. That's something to keep an eye on.
You actually took the question out of my mouth, because I was going to ask you, after seeing how they've been doing the 20% off MSRP on certain models and the targeted incentives, I was going to ask, should we expect to see a lot more of that heading into the Black Friday sales, Christmas sales, Halloween, Thanksgiving sales?
And we've been seeing that increasingly. I mean, last year we saw a lot of noise around the Black Friday sales, and we always see it around holiday promotions. So I certainly expect, we've seen incentives increase over the past year. I would expect that these holiday promotions would be beefier and louder.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Matan Mapinen with Automotive World. Your line is open.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Hi there. I was interested in hearing what you thought we might be seeing through the retail front. Geely's come out with news that it's going to bring a new brand but not sell it through the traditional franchise dealerships. I was interested what you thought we might see growing interest in these alternative forms, and if they might run into any sort of legal troubles with these plans.
Do you want to start, Alec?
I think we've seen, certainly with, we haven't seen a lot of manufacturers find a tremendous amount of success in selling into the U.S. market without utilization of a traditional franchise dealer body. A lot of that obviously is because of our state franchise laws, which in essence require or necessitate that you sell through a dealer network. Tesla is really kind of the first to break that mold, getting exclusions, exceptions, et cetera, based on the nature of their portfolio and the nature of their operation. I think Tesla has, I think to date we could characterize Tesla's performance in the U.S. as relatively successful given their capacity, their price point, certainly the appeal of their product. You know, they found their niche and they're holding strong, and certainly have gotten a lot of support for Model 3, all while finding alternative means of selling into the U.S. outside of a franchise dealer body. So to see another manufacturer come in with a a potentially compelling product to try and replicate that success. It's certainly possible. However, I will say that they'll have their work cut out for them, and the road ahead will certainly be fraught with challenges.
I would add, too, that, you know, the franchise dealers have fought against the Tesla way of selling, and I always reminded reporters that it wasn't just about Tesla. It was opening the door for other automakers, and many will mention Chinese automakers coming in and selling cars in the same way. So I don't think that it will be without a fight from franchise dealers who have a lot of strength in their state legislatures as well as Congress.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Deanne Durbin with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Deanne.
Hi, good morning. I kind of struck out here. I got on the call late. I apologize. And somebody else has already asked some of my questions. But in case you haven't discussed it, can you just talk briefly about incentives and whether or not they're reaching a level that you think is troubling or concerning or not? I mean, obviously ATPs are still at record highs, but I'm wondering sort of what you think about the current incentive level.
Yeah, I can take that one, Michelle. So I would say incentives are certainly at record levels in terms of where they're at today in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, average transaction prices are also at record levels. When you compare the two, right now in terms of the rate of growth,
mm-hmm.
incentives are growing at a faster pace than transaction prices. But given the nature of where the market is today, considering the fact that there is still certainly strong enough demand from consumers to get out there and drive sales, I don't think we're at a trouble spot quite yet. What would concern me is if we get to a point where we see sales really start to decline and incentives continue to grow, or if we see ATPs flatten out and incentives continue to rise. Because again, from a pure historical perspective, if you look at ATPs as a, incentives as a percent of ATPs, we're still under kind of that 10% threshold. We're north of 9% now, which is approaching levels or on par with levels we saw in the run up to the recession.
Okay.
So again, I'd say we're on the upper end of the spectrum in terms of where we would feel comfortable, but ultimately in terms of the pace and the way things are developing now, we're not quite at a time yet where we would say it's time to signal that the manufacturers are acting in an undisciplined way, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, GM's quarterly statements were certainly pointed towards very, very strong profitability. So they're still doing quite well despite rising incentives. You know, they've been able to cut their operating costs in other areas, and other manufacturers are in a similar position. Not all, but certainly some. Some manufacturers certainly are not without their challenges. So that's kind of where I see things now. It's certainly an indicator that we're keeping a very, very close eye on. But for the time being, things are stable.
Okay.
I would add to that, too, that we're seeing incentives rise and we're seeing inventories edge up, but I would expect we're also going to see automakers cut back on production when they need to. We're not going to see, like, this massive rise in inventories and massive rise in incentives and it doesn't do anything. That's where I think we're in danger zone. The other thing that I would add, too, that we're seeing – and there's capability of being much more targeted in incentives
mm-hmm.
than there used to be. So, for instance, you know, we saw, you know, Chevy do a Silverado some incentives on very targeted areas of like Texas and New Mexico, for instance, this past month. We saw Nissan do very targeted incentives around late last month, September that would be, you know, in the Washington, D.C. area, for instance. So they're much more targeted about strategic and targeted on how they're using incentives.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
you got it, Deanne.
Your next question comes from the line of Bernie Wedahl with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey. And thank you again. A couple of things I wanted you to comment on. First, could you comment on the report, Honda sold more trucks than cars this month. I don't know if that's the first time. Just comment on that. And secondly, I clustered together the GM's big SUVs, the Suburban, the Yukons, and Tahoe, and they're up 69% collectively this
right.
month with two fewer selling days. I know they have some 0-for-72 months on 2016 models going on. Is this a false demand? Can this keep up? Last year, those same collective three were up 40. Last month, I'm sorry, we're up 47% on the year. And thank you.
Yeah, so I'll try and take bits of that. In terms of Honda, it was interesting to see that they're and I'm just kind of looking back at their release now. It looks like truck sales, they were almost even in terms of car versus truck sales. But keep in mind, when we talk about Honda...
When you tack on Acura and they're even, it's
right.
it's not quite even.
Oh, there, I might have been looking at just Honda brand in particular. Okay. So I think it's certainly no surprise that all of the growth in the marketplace has been in the sport utility. And when I say sport utility, that kind of feels like, body on frame, truck-based SUVs, which we all know is not the case anymore, right? We're talking Honda CR-V, we're talking
Acura MDX.
MDX, exactly. And I mean, these are models that are amongst the best in their respective classes in terms of what they provide to the marketplace and in terms of residual value performance, durability, dependability. So it's not a tremendous surprise to me to see the pendulum swing the other way for Honda, as it has with a lot of other manufacturers. Certainly, you mentioned Tahoe, Suburban, and some of the larger traditional body-on-frame truck-based large SUVs that have done very, very well. I talked a little bit earlier about Silverado and how well that's done. So I think Honda's performance is really just reminiscent and characteristic of the rest of the industry and of the population as a whole, which is clearly demonstrating that when there isn't a penalty to be paid for an SUV, and that's when I say penalty, that's in terms of driving comfort, in terms of fuel economy, etc., that the general preference is towards an SUV or a CUV rather than a car. And the one thing I'll point out is that, we could look at it and say, well, is it that the incentives are greater on these trucks or SUVs? Are the lease offers more attractive? And frankly, I don't think that's the case. In fact, if you look at the incentive spend for a lot of these manufacturers, in terms of growth of incentives, the focus is not on sport utilities. These vehicles are doing a good enough job of their own standing out. And even from a residual value perspective in the secondary market where incentives are removed from the equation altogether, some of the best performing segments that we see today in terms of expected performance over the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, and out till 5 years, are those sport utility and truck segments. Those vehicles are a little more expensive, but they're holding their value better than traditional cars, again, only because from a broad perspective, whether you're talking new car or used car, your typical car shopper today is leaning in that direction. So I'll leave it there because, Michelle, I'm sure you've got
Well, and I was going to say, we saw this shift from cars to sport utility vehicles take hold in the non-luxury segments. But as you mentioned, the Honda Acura report, it certainly the Acura displays what's happened in the luxury car market. And in fact, I think that the luxury SUVs now outsell luxury cars. That shift has happened exponentially in the luxury car market. And I think you could probably, talk about things like the Chevrolet Suburban and such being in that kind of luxury category, the expensive category. So there is a big shift there in the expensive luxury side of the house.
And can GM keep up with the really big SUVs? Can GM keep up these crazy gains, or and are they falsely supported by incentives?
I think that Alex says no, they're not. Go ahead, Alex. Maybe you mentioned that about they're not supported by. I think there's probably some incentive money, but they can afford to have
that.
Yeah. But
don't get me wrong. There's certainly incentive spend on the large SUVs. I was just trying to make the point that the growth in terms of incentives is not nearly as aggressive as in some of the car segments. And I'll give you an example. We're still compiling the October information, but in September, Tahoe's incentive spend was about $3,600 per unit, so about on par with the rest of the industry, not significantly beyond what you'd expect to see. Suburban was at about $3,700 per unit. So again, there is incentive spend there. Just from a growth perspective, it's not as though they're just throwing crazy cash on the hood. Just as an example, if I look at Chevy Malibu, incentive spend is at $4,800 per unit. The Chevy Sonic, right, which is far more affordable than some of these large SUVs or even the Malibu, you see $2,700 in spend there. So again, if you look at each of those models, and I haven't calculated the numbers right here, but if you look at that incentive spend as a percent of the overall ATP and factor in the fact that there's a lot more profitability baked into something like a Tahoe or a Suburban, those trucks or those SUVs are generating significant cash for General Motors, despite the fact that there's decent incentives. So I would say, yeah, they can most definitely maintain this and would prefer to maintain this as long as possible.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you got it.
Just as a quick reminder, it is star one to ask a question. Your next question comes from the line of Joe Obery with Auto Marketing. Your line is open.
Hi, Joe.
Morning, y'all. Thanks for the call. Michelle, I wanted to follow up with what you mentioned about new car affordability and that a lot of customers are being frozen out of the new car market. So where are most of those folks going? Are they going to independent dealers, going to late model CPO leasing, or are some of them just sort of staying at home?
Or not anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Well, clearly, we haven't broken it out who's doing what, but we certainly think that it's a factor because wages have not gone up, and yet prices of everything, healthcare, education, et cetera, have gone up, as have car prices. And so, people are holding on to their cars longer. If you look at the Polk average, the average age of the vehicle on the road is at 11 and a half years, and that's despite record new car sales, that's gone up. And we are seeing, a robust used car market. So they're either not playing the game yet or they are, buying used. So I think a lot of those might have been a possibility for the compact market, and they're just frozen out.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Brent Snavely with Detroit Free Press. Your line is open.
Hey guys, so just one more quick question for me. I was curious about what your thoughts are on Ram and what FCA is doing with Ram, with the big incentives that they're putting on Ram pickups.
I don't know what they were this in October. They were very high in September.
Yeah, I'm looking up September right now. I know that
they were up around 9,000, I think, in September, but I think they backed them down in October, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, October is still waiting to get. I see for Ram pickup at around $5,000 per unit. That was in September, though, so keep that in mind, and I'll compare that to Silverado. About $5,000 per unit, so relatively even in terms of overall spend. But I know when you look at a lot of the advertisements that Ram has been running, they've certainly been leading with, large cash incentives on the hood for a lot of these Ram pickups. But in terms of volume, it's certainly paid off. I mean, they've had a few very, very strong months for the Ram. I think they even might have outsold Silverado. Maybe not this month, but in September perhaps. Yeah, it looks like they did outsell Silverado in September. So I think ultimately Ram is just trying to ensure that they get equal mind share with Chevy intenders, with Ford intenders, by leaning on incentives to drive that message. But at the end of the day, when we crunch the numbers, it doesn't look as though their actual spend at the time of retail is all that different from what Chevy is doing with Silverado and what and I'm looking up F-Series now just for comparison. Ford F-Series, $4,600 per unit. So they're all around that, you know, high $4,000, low $5,000 range in terms of spend per unit. So, again, unless that jumped up significantly in October for Ram, which it could have, it doesn't look like they're doing anything too different from their domestic competition.
What it does look like, and Ram was a good example of September, is what we saw them put on much heavier incentives of Ram in certain markets, Texas being one of them, on certain models in Texas. So they're doing exactly what we see Chevy doing, very targeted into heavy truck markets to grab some market share there. And it looked like they pulled off, you know, incentives from other vehicles to put it towards Ram, and they can afford to do that. That's their cash cow. So,
just to be clear, the numbers you gave, 4,600 for F Series, 5,000.
Their averages, national averages.
Yeah, five. Okay, those were for September.
Yes, those were for September. Still,
okay.
We still haven't compiled the final October results.
And what did you have for Silverado in September?
Silverado, I think they were similar, a little over 5,000, but I'll pull it up right now. It is, where did you go?
But they did have promotion. You know, Chevy had some promotions in Texas that, you know, there was 11,000 on one special version. There was 7,000 and 8,000, so, but very limited to that market.
It was
keeps the average kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly. Michelle's spot on. And it was a little over 5,200 for Silverado.
Great. Thanks. Yeah, they, and on their website right now, it just vanished from my screen. I think I moved to a different screen, but I think I saw 20% off of, but targeted models, a specific Ram 1500 model. And that may have been a 16 model versus a 17.
Yes,
we
saw that in October. The heaviest incentives obviously were on the 16 models because the 17s are arriving, and they were the 17 incentives were much lower.
Yeah.
I've seen some data on that.
All right. Hey, thanks. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
There are no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to Ms. Bueller.
Thank you. Please keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. And if you need anything else today or in the future, please feel free to reach out to an AutoTrader Kelly Blue Book public relations team member, and we will be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
This concludes this morning's conference call. You may now disconnect.